Yep. Just had a whole couple minute conversation.
Jim won't talk to you. He'll just stay awkwardly silent until you press record.
I only talk when we're recording. I don't want to talk otherwise. This is all a fake relationship.
Who is this guy? Oh, wait. We're recording now. Cool.
Oh, I know you now.
I remember. You were saying? Staying up late?
I stayed up way too late last night. I got into a binge of coding again.
Nice. Just
dumb. It's like, yeah. Is your Enfuego less Enfuego?
Yeah. The fire is out. Still get notifications. Like, just keep popping up on my phone. Little flare-ups. But, we're good. Fire situation's good for now. Thank you.
Okay, good. Saw you were back at the Airbnb of butter. Airbnb butter.
Yeah, no, we're good. Also staying up way too late, finishing jobs. Just, you know, classic poor time management stuff I should have drawn and made weeks ago. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I'll
got
do
one
that.
Of those right now.
Far out. Feel stupid. Didn't get enough sleep this week. Feeling very tired. And then just came to work early and realized that the job that's going to Melbourne today is the wrong tone of white again. So I'm frustrated.
There's only one white. That's crazy.
There's only one white. There's not.
It's like the first lesson of design school.
So many whites.
So many whites. So yeah. Many grays.
Oh,
gray,
so many grays.
Spelled with an A or an E.
Yeah, I don't even know what I use anymore.
Whatever. I don't either. I've thought about that on like our website. I was like, do I even use the same color spelling of gray across the website? No, probably not.
What are you binge coding? Airshop?
Just Airshop.
Cool.
Yep, finally getting subscription billing set up so people can pay for the thing I've been working on for, I don't even want to say how long, but that's pretty much ready. I've got the Stripe test environment set up and I just have to finish and get the production environment set up. And it's pretty nice little, I was daunted by it, but it's like kind of fun to like, it's a pretty critical aspect, right? Of like, I haven't even gotten to like the upsell part of like, your trial's ending. Here's what, you know, here's your value.
Yeah.
Pay money now?
Is it fiddly? I can see how that would be daunting, but is it actually that hard?
Nah. You know, all of this takes a lot of time, I think, to make it how you want it. You know, that's the reason why Stripe is a multi-billion-dollar company, too, is it just, like, lets you take some strings of code that let it integrate perfectly with what you're doing, and like it pulls down all the copy and pricing information. So if I change it in Stripe, it'll update in the app.
Yeah, cool. Sweet. Nice one. Have you got any test users other than you and Ricky online?
Yeah, got yesterday I had a really good chat with one of our listeners. I don't think I'll call you out here, but appreciate you.
Yep.
Reaching out. I've had a couple of people reach out.
Sweet.
And they're a perfect test case. American West Coast company that has an incredibly large inventory. They had 15,000 parts that they deal with. Not like that they make, but like in their inventory.
Yeah.
I don't use much quoting currently, but they're excited to try and very excited with what we have to offer. And that being a bigger part of how they do it. And it's very funny that I sent this to Aaron today. I got a quote for injection molding our tool tags from a American company. And I got the quote in a DOCX file
that
my Mac opens it in Pages and then destroys it. Right. Like it doesn't even look the same as if you open it anywhere else. And like the way that like the text is aligned, you can't really tell which is associated with which. It's just like a multi-million dollar company. How do you quote in doc files? I don't understand. It's like Airshops, we've got a ton of customer potential here.
Sick. Very good. Yeah, I'm keen to jump back in and have another look at some stage. Well, I've got some headroom.
Should. Play with it.
Yeah.
I need to this week confirm, because I also had somebody else reach out from Australia, like, if there's any problems with having international customers. I don't for sure know that yet. I would assume it's just probably like dealing with the local, I don't even know, local laws or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you might need some different tax settings if you're dealing with currency stuff.
Right.
But yeah, true.
Right.
Good point. Yeah, I don't feel like I haven't had capacity to even engage with what you're doing lately. Like last night.
A couple friends like that, so you're not the only one.
Oh, I got home last night.
It's not.
Yeah, after the kids were down, I was like, oh my God, this is like the first window in weeks where I feel like I've got a second to like finally watch that random video.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
It's like my first hour off. Oh my God. But then I remember I have to fit car
just
seats.
Like in your underwear, just like.
Oh yeah.
So good.
But
I've been waiting for.
I did get most of the way through that indulgent hour of random routing. It was delightful. Enjoyed every second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I ruin too much of it?
Nah. Love it. Yeah, I think the thing that strikes me most about that setup is the just absurd vacuum hold down that he runs on such a big machine. Like,
those parts are so
cutting
small.
Tiny little parts. He's just like,
pop. It was, what would you say it was? 80 mil, no, maybe close to 100 mil by like 40 mil part, just held down by vacuum, cutting aluminum. Maybe you haven't gotten there. He cuts this like slot piece about
that little bit
out of a sheet.
Funk.
Just, and he had to pull it up. It was like stuck down. It was like, what is this magic?
And is he misting ethanol? So this is something John and I have talked about a little bit, of like the mist fluid that we use is kind of greasy, pink, sticks to your parts. It soaks into the MDF spoil board and it's kind of, and then, you know, leave stain on subsequent jobs. And we've talked about maybe switching out to something like ethanol that won't stain. Anyway, it's something I don't know much about. Have you ever misted ethanol? Put vodka in your misters?
I know that's what friends that have Datrons use, and it's fairly costly.
Yeah.
And the conventional internet wisdom that we used the last time we did aluminum, last two times, was isopropyl alcohol, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, nice.
It's like cheap. You don't need a lot of it. Doesn't
cheaper than ethanol,
leave residue or stain. I guess I can't say that. It's just easy to get. Can you just buy ethanol somewhere? Like,
I don't know.
Like, easy. I just go to the grocery store and get isopropyl alcohol, you know, like,
yeah,
it's really easy to get.
I wonder if we could put isopropyl just through our current mister, or whether we'd have to swap out seals and rubbers and stuff.
Ours is from, it's like $25 a few years ago from Amazon. Like, it's nothing special.
Your mister?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
It's like knock line.
Yeah.
Crappy. Probably can find it.
Cool. All right.
We don't run it often, so maybe it's destroyed now and I haven't tried it since then, you know?
Wonder what the risk of fire is. Little flamethrowers. I suppose, yeah, I don't know.
I did wonder that too. I mean, I'm not going to cut any steel anytime soon on my router, but, right.
Old mate. Random routing cut a little steel part in that video. That little steel puck. Boink. Also vacuum held down. It's just...
Yeah, he cut steel? I didn't catch that. That's
yeah,
crazy.
I'm pretty sure he cut a little steel part. It's just a wild setup. I love it.
It's just, it makes me feel how I feel about cutting metal on mills. Like it feels that quality, and like cutting metal on the router is, I wouldn't say scary, but it just, it sounds kind of wrong, you know, the whole time. You're like, ooh, is that going to fly? Is it going to break the tool? Is it too fast? And you send a 25 horsepower, like, aluminum cutting tool at aluminum on a mill, and it's just kills it. And it's like
different sound.
Like butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
yeah,
comes out, you know, with, you know, a reflection. And
Have you cut steel parts this week? Did I see something about real metal?
I cut steel this week.
Real part?
I don't have any in front of me.
My God.
I was wondering last night, because I let it sit for a day. I was wondering last night, I was like, did it rust? You know, like, because I cut half of them, and I like have never cut steel. And I was driving to work this morning. I was like, did I just leave it out and rust it overnight? Like, I didn't clean them well. They're sitting in egg crates. I need to do op 2 on them. They're just like little parts for a local robotics club. I agreed to do in December, and I was like, yeah, give me a couple weeks. And they're like, oh, we're not in a hurry. And it's been like 5 weeks. Yep. And I finally was just like, I got to do it. This is dumb. And it was easy. I cut the first part, and I was like, what was I so concerned about? This was so simple. Like, it's just slower than aluminum, basically. And I use different tools.
Yep. Sick. How many tools in your ATC?
30. Which still feels moderately adequate. I haven't filled it up yet, but I went up to, we had a 20 before, and I basically filled that pretty easily with aluminum tools. And so my hope is that the extra 10 will be enough to do the minimal amount of steel that I need and not touch the other ones. So
yeah, sick.
Yeah, it's easy.
Very good. Exciting.
I think my I'm not going to say OCD, but just like my like over concern for things. Like, one of the things that was holding me back from doing it was, how do you separate the material? And I think a lot of people that do job shop work just mix their material and recycle it and get nothing for it, or throw it away even. And my brain is like, what do you mean? Like, I got to keep the 6061 separate from the 1018, and like, I don't want any to mix. And like, the way that the UMC especially is set up, it's like, it's got a conveyor, but it basically has this like really bad way that it like catches stuff inside. So like, we're constantly getting chunks. We stopped getting brass pieces from the previous customer.
Oh, wow.
Finally. But it took many runs. It just kept coming out in little chunks. Like, it would like break out of the back underneath. So that's going to happen, I think. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do about it, you know? Just ignore it and keep moving on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you do? You need, yeah. I mean, I remember the John Bombs talking about, like, trying to do automatic chip separation things with vision systems and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, surely for your sort of volume, you'll be mainly aluminium anyway, right? Aluminium,
I don't know.
Sorry.
Maybe I'm aluminium. Maybe I'm a steel guy now.
Maybe.
Aluminium. It did immediately open my like feelings of like, I've been wanting to make work holding products from steel for like a year and a half at least, and I just haven't done it. And this was, I knew when I said yes to this robotics class team doing little steel parts, I was like, finally, I'm going to get to these. I'm going to be able to cut my work holding ideas. And so,
yeah. Where are you at with that?
We'll see.
That design.
I've got a couple different ones. The bigger one you're probably referring to is largely there. And I think I was going to go with aluminum to start with on that, and then offer a steel version down the line, depending on how it goes. But the other products have some smaller clamps that I do think they just need to be made out of steel primarily, and specifically so that the threads don't just get destroyed after repeated use. It's so easy to tear out aluminum threads, especially in the pitch that I was going to use for it. It's like some of those smaller under M5, the thread is just
so weak.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I mention I got a tenant for my shop next door?
What?
Sublease?
No.
It's like 98% confirmed. I just need a deposit because it's 2 days till the next month. This very cool guy. Maybe I'll talk about him down the road, but met him locally, has a cool business, needed space for storing his product that he sells. Okay. And was cool with being in a space with a CNC machine.
Yeah.
He's just been busy with the beginning of his year was kind of crazy. So he signed a lease, just hasn't paid yet. And I'm excited for that to happen and start. It's a pretty big difference in like the bottom line of the year of like not having to fully pay for that as it ramps up. So
will they be sort of active users of the space or is it more of a storage in and out vibe?
I don't know if he knows quite yet because he's been a garage home business, but basically blew through his space. And I'm pretty sure he wants a space for an office, which is why he's going to take the office and then has a lot of product coming in that needs to be stored on racks. So
gotcha. Okay, cool.
Way more than a garage can fit.
Yeah, yeah. Good one.
Yeah, it's nice. Fun.
Yeah, awesome.
Took from October to mid-January.
Yep.
It's all right. It was kind of staged that way. I mean, I would have always taken it earlier, but it wasn't terrible. It was going to get terrible in the upcoming months as the price, my lease discount dropped off as we ramped into it, so.
Yeah. How's, all the shite that is going down in your country, how's the general economic vibe of sales and optimism?
Our UPS guy keeps coming up and going, God, you guys are just doing better and better. And I'm like, that's a good, like, canary, I think. Or like,
thanks, canary.
That's not the right word.
I know what you mean.
My canary UPS driver. But yeah, it's been pretty good. We're about to double our best month of order, like quantity, which is kind of wild. And it's largely that the fangs just went off this month. Had some really good advertising that's just, I mean, they're small orders, but like we sold like 600 or 700 of them, I think, in a month, which was kind of wild. It was like,
wow.
Just suddenly, I mean, it's not a lot of money, you know, compared to what we used to for an order, but it's really nice. It's like people seem to just, there's no comment about it when they receive it. So that, to me, that's always a good sign. It's like, there's not a bunch of complaints.
I remember when you first showed me the prototype, I was like, hell yeah, that's the thing I've wanted for years. So I can see why you sold some units.
The common response.
Yeah.
I've upgraded that page a little bit, trying to get it to convert a little bit higher. And one thing that I saw, which I'll pass along, I think it was pretty successful, put a link to you here, is Michael Gimbel from Gimbel Automation was posting about how he upgraded his product pages to have like a how it works or like a process section. And I was like, oh, I should do that. That's a good idea. So I added, it's not perfect, but if you scroll down a bit there, you can see there's like a how you set it up. Kind of how it works. And I think it's more clear than just my rendering images and static images where they don't.
We don't have to click on a video.
Mm-mm.
To see how it works. It's just like, that's awesome. Nice renders.
So I'm adding that. Thanks. I was at home, so I didn't have. I get too anxious. I'm like, I just got to make it. So I just rendered it instead of taking real photos.
It's good.
On not brand. AI, though. It's not AI.
I can tell. Nice.
What did I just do? Oh, I didn't know that worked like that. Oh, I've got to update those links. Holy moly. I just found a whole section on our website with the old help desk. Knowledge. Base links.
Cool.
What's going on with you?
What's going on with me?
I've been talking a lot.
What's happening in the shop this week? Can't believe the week is over. We had a weird week with one of our colonialist public holidays. And and it's been super hot. We've had a crazy heat wave. Hottest area in the world this week was little old Victoria, Australia. Where we had temperatures of what's that in Fahrenheit? I don't know. Come on, Google. Not fast enough. 122 degrees. Pretty warm. Yep. So paint was drying weirdly, and trying to get spraying done early morning or evening, and just get shit done. But it went okay. Yeah, no fires in this heat wave, thankfully, around us. We're a little bit worried again that we evacuated one night because the temperature was just too high, and we're like, yeah, not bad conditions. But thankfully, the wind stayed pretty chill, so we did okay. Yeah, just been trying to finish off some jobs and set up some very satisfying little programs on the robot using that new trick I mentioned last week of like user inputs. Been playing with that like more.
Parameters?
Yeah, basically just parameters in the program that are prompted when you load the program and first run it, and it prompts for things. And, you know, I've just made a program now for Abe, who's got the spindle and is running that CNC tools, orbital sanding, ISO 30 tool. I've just made a program for Abe, which is called, you know, sand anything. And so you can just input what you want and it'll just work wherever to whatever number of passes.
Oh my God.
So I've been using that more. Pretty cool. So it's kind of nice just slowly finding more use cases for them. Just to make little quality of life improvements to production of like, cool, you don't need to sand those edges, Rowan, because they're all done. So it's been nice.
Is it loading and unloading, that kind of thing? Or you probably have to load it?
Not that machine.
Yeah, that's pretty complicated. Yeah.
It's kind of load a slab of like parts and then do all the edge sanding in kind of one slab and then turn it over and run the second socket side. But, you know, I can just be out there doing email stuff while I wait for it to finish and swap it over. But, yeah, kind of, yeah, stuck out on the floor a little bit too much this week. Probably didn't get through enough quotes, so cash flow's a bit crap this end of the week. And now I've got that job out there, which I think I'm going to have to call the client and say, sorry, we're not going to install it today because it's the wrong color. So I'm not looking forward to that conversation. But otherwise, things are chipping away okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's good. You feel like he'll catch up and... I guess, I mean, it's not critical. I'm just aware of from our long weekly conversations of like, are you itching to get back to like some kind of R&D or like newish things?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah. I mean, Ben's back now. So I've got my full team back on deck. So it means initially my focus can switch back to quote land and just build that momentum back up again. And then once that's back on track, I can start to, sink some more hours back into new stuff, which I'm looking forward to. Those steel parts look good. I just saw them. You'd uploaded into Airtable. Are they the little round discs?
Yep. They're like flywheels, I guess.
All right.
I had them, pretty much the cheapest, I want to say, way I could get it was to make blanks on SunCut Send. I don't remember the exact price. It was under $5 a piece for 6 of them shipped to me.
Wow. Nuts.
I got them a few weeks back, but... And then I made a little Talon grip. You can buy these, but I just made it. It's got a handful of different positions to put the talon grips in widths so that when you clamp it together, you can clamp a circle in different diameters depending on the vise, or, you know, basically just shift them in and out. And it worked great. I was trying to get a one and done setup, but I was going to tape and glue them, and I was like, I don't know. I don't really want to fly off these discs, so I'm going to make a little soft jaw that pops in and just do it that way, the old-fashioned way.
Have you ever done any like central work holding where it expands into a feature?
Not yet.
What's that called?
It sounds great. I know, like, Saunders just came out with some of those. There's a few versions.
Is that what expanding, is that what the puck is? Is that what the Saunders puck is? I've never actually looked it up.
Puck is like a 0 point system.
The chuck puck.
Where they, I think so. Yeah, and puck, he's puck, got. Chuck. I think they only have pneumatic ones currently, and they're coming out with a manual spring version at some point. That'll be cheaper.
Wah.
I mean, Pearson's
I don't
got one.
What, oh, I see. It's like a little takes a stud. Gotcha. Yep.
And that does expand. But yeah, but they came out with, what do they call them? Fixture pin? Expanding pins. These little boys. Haven't tried them. But I heard them talking about they make them on their Willimon, I'm pretty sure, which is cool. Little slitted. There's an animation
cool.
I've heard.
Yeah, a little tapery widget. What's that? Where would you use one of these? So in that application. So if you had like that round disc that you're milling with a central hole in it, you could use
this.
Makes
me wonder
if
it would spin if it didn't have enough, you know?
Yeah. That's cool.
I need to like break my brain out of its like traditional way. Like I made a joke about putting my Kurt Weiss back on the UMC. It's like the Nicoderm patch of like being a 3-axis user going to like the 5-axis. I just like can't stop using this old, you know, it's not wrong, but like it does have weird consequences of like, since it shifted to the back of the platter, like I don't have a lot of rear Y space for a part when that vise is on there. But I do have all these fixtures and capability with the Carve Smart Jaws that I don't have another way to hold currently. So like I'll probably eventually find a way to adapt those to a self-centering vise, I guess, maybe, or come up with a different solution that, because they are super nice. Like it's so easy to put a Carve Smart Jaw on and off, and it repeats really nice. And
yeah. Okay.
Just kind of reusing what I have for now.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Makes sense.
On automation thoughts, this, I think, a pretty guy I followed fairly recently, Waffles and Premix, bought a gimbal automation pneumatic vise and I think gripper. It's hard to tell. It was a pretty sped up video. I was messaging with him, but the UMC has a cool, I don't know if many do, but if you turn to B90, it's got a little place you can mount other stuff to the side of the trunnion.
Not really.
That's what you call it? Side of the thing? So
yeah.
I sent a link to it. But he's got this big old fixture with like spring clamps where he's taking stock off, turning the platter back on flat, putting it in the air vise, cutting it, taking it back out, putting it back. And so it's like completely contained, doesn't need like a separate lifting mechanism. And I got really excited about that because my like work holding ideas would absolutely fit really well in that kind of little setup.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I've never looked up spindle grippers. How do they work? So you just tool change out to the gripper, and then how do you actuate it?
Gimbal's got air, through coolant. They've also got like, I want to say both external air and external coolant, I want to say, where like a line comes in with a M code that kind of attaches as it tool changes in on the side. I have through coolant, so it should work for that. And I'm going to work with Gimbal on a little bit of a collaboration. I'm getting one of their air. He's got a new product that's like a Roto Clear, basically, the branded thing, but he's making his own. So they're going to send me one. I'm going to put it on the UMC.
But how, saying a bit, so you got through spindle air, which then actuates the gripper tool. Is that how they work?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And then you tool change it away. And I mean, like, if you're not familiar, for people that have never seen this, I had until I had a mill, through spindle things, it's literally a hole in the tool at the top, and it goes through the pole stud. Your pole stud has to be open, the tool holder has to be open, and then depending on the tool holder, it can either come out the nose, like I have some shrink fits that come out the nose, or it comes out the tool.
Yeah.
Or it comes out weird places on the tool holder, like the sides. It can like spray out in like weird orientations, but you can get drills that are through spindles. So anyway, it pushes the coolant through and makes a terrible noise if you don't have a through spindle tool, compatible tool in, which apparently will blow the lines off. Only done it twice so far, and it terrifies me every time.
Oh, right. That's cool. Yeah, I've never actually, I've heard of spindle grippers. I've never actually looked them up to see how they work, but that's sick.
Got another one for you. I'll put some links here.
So you can't drive one without
products
through spindle air or through spindle coolant. Is that right?
Well, you can get that, like, he's got, like, the external, it's like a tool holder goes in for the gripper, and then on the side, there's like a little male or female doohickey that then attaches to the outside of the spindle when it's in that position.
Mm.
And then there's a new solenoid or something that lets air go in and out. So if you don't have through spindle tool something,
okay,
it's another way to do it. He's come up with some really great
actually
third party ways to like automate your machine, basically.
That's sick. Very cool.
I don't know what the downsides are of that. I'm assuming it's a little less flexible or something, but maybe it's not.
Mm, looks great. Nice. Exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, like...
No, you go. I'm excited.
I'm just really excited about, like, buying the UMC has been great, and I actually had that feeling cutting the steel this week of, like... I don't know if I felt regret buying the YCM, but like I never had comfort. It never felt right. And I've had that feeling already with like, I was like, this is absolutely going to be a great investment. Like it's just, it doesn't feel wrong. I haven't made any ROI on the months I've paid for it so far, but it's like, I can just see.
Yeah.
I love working with the control. It's like so easy and intuitive.
Yeah. Awesome. That's good. Can see the potential. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wish Haas would pay me more. I mean.
More zeros on Justin's check, please.
Or anything.
Come on. That's kind of the next stage for me with the robot sanding stuff is to wrap my head around pick and place. And I just haven't... I've like my shelf sanding program is basically at a point now where it's picking up a part and sanding it and putting it back, but it's putting it, picking and placing in exactly the same location with no logic in terms of like stack height and stuff. So that's kind of my next little hurdle, which for some reason I've got a little bit of resistance about sort of just sitting down. I don't think it's actually going to take that long to nut it out, but I just need to, at the moment, the part is just picked up from the top of the robot controller cabinet and like squashes down into the cabinet. Mm-hmm. I can see it like compressing the sheet metal as it picks up the part with a little bit too much pressure.
It's just a little spring action.
A little spring, yeah.
Soft touch.
So I've held off doing it partly because I haven't decided where the best location is going to be for the pickup and then the put down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the next bit of that project to tackle. It's the logic of cool. Like every time you pick one up, you need to pick up this increment lower and then place this increment higher and blah, blah, blah. But that'll be nice. I'm excited about getting into that soon.
Yeah.
And that's then great. I've thought about like, because you know, as you know, plywood variation varies in thickness. And like if I've got a stack of 30 parts, am I going to run into like compound error issues where as it works its way down, the increment that I've set will change to such an extent that it will fail to pick up or it will apply too much pressure or something. So like, how do I deal with that? Do I need some sort of like mechanical spring mechanism that just kind of keeps things or just gives me a lot of grace, or try and use like, because the robot's got force sensing. It's like, do I try and get force feedback
of like,
cool, I've put this much pressure. I know that's, I must be in the right spot now.
I think, I mean, I have no awareness of like how much different what you're dealing with versus the UR stuff, but that was like for my one weird training, it was like, that's the way to kind of do that is it's like move in Z till you feel this pressure and that can like take up your slop basically.
Yeah.
And then maybe have like a limit.
The other day I tried dialing back all the force sensing stuff to try and sort of in an attempt to make them like just safer to be around. Like, cool, I'm doing such light duty work. Why don't I dial down the threshold so that, you know, if they do crash into the cabinet or something or a fixture, that they'll error out more quickly. And I kind of started like, I set it down really low and then it just refused to move. Kind of worked my way up until it was happy. But I've sort of pretty quickly realized that if you want it to move with any sort of agility, like it, at a reasonable pace, then that sort of incurs, you know, a fair amount of sort of acceleration, which will trigger the threshold. So it was kind of, maybe that's the difference with sort of, you know, cobots versus industrial robots, is that stuff is more nuanced in a cobot.
Right.
Because this was pretty broad strokes of like, cool, if I set it to 150, it errors out. But if I set it to 200, then it's okay. So it's like, cool, it's slightly better than how it was. But it's, you know, still a huge 2.5-ton arm swinging around the air. Don't get complacent, Jack.
2.5-ton. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Right. So I had this idea. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Go. No, I was just going to say.
Finish what you're saying.
I had a moment yesterday where I was making some logic modifications to the sanding input program, which I was doing through Uncle Sven, one of my Sim Theory robots. And I just had this moment of like, I should probably check this program before I run it. Just in case it's done something really stupid, which it does.
You're committing on main again?
Yeah, committing on main with a robot. Bad plan. What were you going to say?
Oh, it was tangential to robots, but when you were talking earlier about putting a parameter in for your size of your sanding, I was thinking about how, I don't know if this is possible, I was just thinking about like a logic game of wanting to be able to probe, but maybe instead of writing this whole probing routine that's kind of like the traditional Renishaw where it taps on both sides, it's just you bring the robot down till it's like right dead center where you think it's dead center, and then you have it go and let's say X and Y, I don't know what the, you know, left and right, up front and back, with some kind of soft rollerish touch thing. So it's like putting pressure down on your surface, and then when it feels nothing, that's the edge.
Oh yeah.
And it goes on the other side. I don't know if that's beneficial to them, just like a normal probing routine, but it's kind of a dumb way to do it, I feel like.
Just like picturing a like a wet noodle flopping around on the... Oh, yeah, rose edge. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking like giant rollerball pen, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, nice. That
like
makes
a huge
sense.
One. 25 mil rollerball.
Punk, punk.
Yeah. And that would give you, like, for sanding purposes, like, the center of the part, the Z height, the XY. I don't know. Maybe that's just way too complicated.
Well, old mate Lee, Robot Master Lee, at Twiggenbot, made his own probe just with micro switches and stuff. So I think...
Which is super cool.
Yeah. For that sort of low tolerance robo work.
Do that.
I think it's all doable. Yeah. It's probably better than the wet noodle.
Can you buy a giant rollerball pen? That's the real question. Started out with nothing. Now I can't stop the ideas from coming for too many things. I bought finally pulled the trigger on the Hoffman slitting saw. I've known about it for a couple of years, like since I bought the YCM, and I just resisted the coin because it's $274 for the blade, an 80x2mm blade.
It's tiny. Why so expensive? What's so special about it?
European. I don't even know the VAT costs on it yet. That's going to be interesting.
Have you used slitting saws before?
Very minimally. I bought Jack's Precision was selling a used Meritool 2-inch, I want to say. And it's really thick. It's like 0.25, well, so it'd be 2.5 millimeters thick. It's pretty thick, not very wide, but it did mostly do what I wanted. The downside to this, and I kind of learned like, oh, this isn't what I want for like a production setting. It has a nut on the bottom of it, whereas these Hoffman ones are flush. So you can like,
ooh, nice.
It really messes with how close and far in you can get to things because the nut is pretty significant. Like being able to get close to your vise, basically, where you can like sneak up to nothing now with the flush version. So it's basically $600 to get the tool holder, the adapter, and the saw, and hopefully you don't break the saw right away. But it's on its way. I'm excited for that, though. I think that'll be good for some automation-ish one-op setups on the YCM.
Or the UMC. Nice.
Haven't done that in a while.
For good. Yeah, I remember when I made my, when I was doing kit parts on the flatbed, and I made my own slitting saw arbor just out of some mild steel bar. But those little slitting saws, which were a similar size, they were probably about that diameter, 80, and they were thin.
Yeah.
They were cheap. I can't remember. I bought like a 6-pack somewhere online. They were pretty inexpensive little things. I broke quite a few of them mucking around. I think having that flush, I remember the nut, the washer and nut combination on the end of my slitting saw being a pretty limiting factor in terms of where I could get it, what I could do with it. So having that flush end would be rad.
Yeah, there's the other brand that I got most of my knowledge from, Dylan Jackson, talking about this, and there's also PH Horn, which is also a German company. And they were even smaller diameter, but a little bit cheaper. And I couldn't, it's really hard. It's like one of those weird, like, I don't really have a specific use case other than I knew the saw that I had was too small right now.
Sure.
But you can go up to, these ones go up to 160 millimeters for $423 a piece.
Yeah,
6 inches.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll tool change for me. A little too
fun.
Wide. Yeah.
Beep boop. Beep boop.
Had an interesting one where we did a project for a local customer in 2019. So we had just moved into this space. My rates and what I charged was about 70% less than what it is now.
Wow.
And my cost per hour, which I've since, I made a whole calculator you can use on our website, but I didn't estimate my cost per hour. I had at least one employee part-time, myself, the space, I think a machine payment, and I was estimating my cost per hour at $25 an hour then, which is just like laughably bad. And so I was looking it over. They wanted to have another one made. We didn't have to do like any, it's like this custom thing we made for them. And I was like, probably not going to like the price today. I can't match. I mean, material went up, you know, a bunch, but like the labor was like way more. So just an interesting
Did revelation of the 2026 pricing?
Not yet. They were expecting it to be less than what it was, but appreciated my explanation of what changed, and we'll see if it goes through. But it's a good lesson. I feel like it's hard to understand that, and I still don't feel like I'm perfectly accurate with my cost calculations to know what profitability is today, but like, it's way more accurate than it was back then when I was like, I'm only paying for like one person to work, so I'll just add a little bit to their hourly wage, and that's probably right. You know, like,
that'll do.
That's enough. I'm making $75 an hour right now.
You sent me that question link. It looks like I can make a comment on behalf of your client.
Can you accept it?
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't put that in our show notes.
Put that in the show notes.
Viewed 2 minutes ago.
Oops.
Yeah, that's the old one. The other crazy thing, just from like a pure understanding of like how long things should take, which I think is just something you got to learn. You got to fail out a bunch potentially, or my brain. So I think I only had 10 hours of labor, and this was like designing, cutting, assembling, test fitting, taking it apart, sanding it, test fitting. It took us like a week to make this thing. I was probably a quarter of the time we needed to actually do it. And at the time, I looked at what I sent them in an email, and I was like apologetic about the price. It was more than I had estimated originally. And I was like, it should have been like triple the price that it was. Just even then.
One of those jobs. Mm-hmm. Done plenty of those.
Yep. My last thought off the top of my head here, what I wrote down is I had this thought of, I saw somebody do some pretty cool Blender renderings, and I always have that feeling of like, do I want to learn Blender? Not really. You know, it looks terrible to use. But I know it's really powerful. It's free. And it was probably, I don't know if I was actually in the shower or just doing something else. It's kind of like a shower thought. I was like, I wonder if I can create Python scripts or scripts. Can I script what I want Blender to do? And I think that's what our friend Matthew is doing with creating his animations, right? Is it's basically just scripts.
Cool.
Unless you actually have to learn all the GUI. And according to my agent, it says it's totally possible. And it gave me examples of like things you could do, and it can actually make the geometry for you with the script, which I have the geometry that I want, you know, like products rendered and stuff. I just want like little animations to like show the product better.
It's an interesting idea. Just like hack your way into a product you can't use by just go straight to scripting.
I have no interest in learning Blender.
No, I have in the past. And then every time I've tried, I've just been a bit overwhelmed by the interface and haven't tried.
Yeah, it's like the worst interface ever.
Yeah, I've always found it pretty challenging to get anything done in it. Even just like when we're doing the Kitaparts configurator with that company in Helsinki, like they wanted all the files in a Blender format. And so all we had to do was get our step files into Blender and then get them out again. And even just doing that, it's like,
even that is hard. You have to like apply filters painful. And like, I feel like even saving or exporting was like really messy and complicated for some reason. So yeah, if I can just type plain, this is like the pure power of LLMs to me, is like, I type plain English, you make complicated software
work.
You
make the thing, please.
Ooh, sexy rendering? Yes, thank you.
Ken has a rendering? Thank you.
You have to talk in whatever cheeseburger cat. What was that thing called?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Cool.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Things and stuff.
Go repaint your white. The right white.
Yeah, I'll go and send them a message. See what they think. Cool banana. Good to see you.
Yeah. Same.
Same.
Next week.
Bye bye.
Hold on. Let me find it.
Hit something. You got it.
Done it twice, and it terrifies me every time.